This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Welcome to My Millennial Property. You're with John Pidgeon and Emily Wallace.
Now, John, for some people, it might be their very first time tuning in, and how lucky you are to tune in. But I just thought it might be a timely reminder. Of course, please keep listening to this episode, but there are quite a few episodes we've done across a couple of different seasons. Now, one episode in particular that might be good to earmark for you is back from 2020. It's episode number 251, and it's titled Alternative Ways to Find Properties. Now, earmark it as the next one that you listen to, because if you are on your property buying journey and you're trying to be inventive and think out of the box, this could be a great one for you to listen to, but only after you've listened to this episode, okay?
In order.
So let's get cracking into today's episode.
Let's do it.
Now, John, it's pretty clear that I spend a fair bit of time in the old My Millennial Money Facebook group. I love a good tag. I like replying. I like helping where we can.
You do, yes. And well done.
The only problem is I need to remember what I respond to, because every time we go to record, we've got to go back and cross-check. But there are a few things we wanted to unpack today, and Glenn James has tagged us in a post and said, "Sounds like your problem, property peeps."
Passing the butt to us, really.
Which is fine. That's okay. So Claire Eisen has asked that she would love an episode about the pros and cons of subletting houses and what is involved. Now, I don't know that this requires a whole episode itself, because we're going to unpack some other things, but great question, Claire. So let's unpack it for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I actually came across this a couple of months ago with a client. They wanted to buy an investment property in the town where their daughter was first going to university. And their model was, let's go and buy this property. Our daughter will be catered for the duration of her 4 years at university. We think it's a good town to invest in anyway, but she can... or we can basically sublet the other rooms to her friends, and it's a win-win. She gets to live with other people, experience the uni life, and they get to have a cash flow position that helps their investment property, and hopefully that property builds over time as well. So yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it, provided that the strategy works for them, of course, and it's not just to house their daughter. But there's many variations of this, isn't there?
Well, that's the biggest thing. And just as you were explaining that, my little brain was ticking over, and I was thinking, like, is there a formal agreement in place with the people who sublet? You know, is the rent equal to market value? There's quite a few things that, I guess, if you're going down a private rental pathway, that can go one way or the other. So I don't know, do you know in that situation if they had done some sort of agreement, like written agreement with the other people who were subletting?
Yeah, and we did speak about this to them, because it was literally their first time going through that process. So I said, look, I would get a property manager involved anyway, because it just keeps them separate from the source of the tenants, I suppose, and then it's very clear when they're moving out and paying bonds and everything else. So it's pretty much business as usual. Well, that's what I recommended to them. Now, there are situations where obviously if it's say a 4-bedroom house and the daughter is renting that one room, there's still 3 rooms spare, and they can sublet those out just with cash or direct into their bank account. Now, that has some tax implications there. So you just need to make sure, and I know she spoke about the pros and cons of this exercise. One of the cons is making sure that you track that income correctly and you don't have an alert come up from the ATO saying, hang on, where's all this cash coming from? So that needs to be well documented in a way. So talking to your accountant before you go about that.
Definitely. And I think another case scenario, and particularly for first home buyers to help them with their mortgage repayments, could be that the person who owns the house, so it's not an investment, it's actually an owner-occupied residence, has, you know, maybe bought a three-bedroom home to grow into over time, but at the moment it's just a young couple and they want to maybe let out one of the rooms and have the other as a study, whatever it might be. And they've sort of set their own private rent and they are effectively just sort of paying cash. And I think that's where people are nervous about getting caught out. And also, again, a con, if it's not a signed rental agreement with somebody sort of stepping in the middle to collect that rent or a bond or even have rules around the condition and the treatment of the property, that could get a little bit ugly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So my thinking around this, not sure what you're thinking, Emily, but regardless of the situation, I would have a property manager involved to basically cut out all of that middle work, the bond, the inspections, all that stuff, so that it's business as usual from that point of view. You just may know the person that's living in your house or in a dwelling on your property.
Definitely. Now, I'm not sure if you probably have more technicality ability than I do when it comes to this, or maybe we need an accountant to loop back in on this, but from the position of owning a home and, you know, you've told your bank that you're owning it and you're treated as an owner-occupier, if you then start having an income from your property, does that now mean it's an investment property, or what does that look like in the eyes of the ATO and also the banks?
Yeah, I was chatting to my accountant about this a couple of weeks ago, actually. It is a bit of a grey area, and it depends on how long you own the property. You're allowed to obviously choose one property as your principal place of residence for CGT purposes, capital gains tax purposes. But if you are generating an income from it on the books, not cash under the pillow, then it will have an implication on your capital gains tax when you come to sell that property. So just be aware of that, but chat to your accountant before that, because there's many variations of that ruling. But one thing I thought of was there's a few different ways that we can sublet. Now, it's the example I gave with my client and their daughter. It was a four-bedroom house, three-bedroom spare, but there's the other option where there's a granny flat out the back, or it's a duplex and you've got one house essentially spare from the two. So it's a very different look, isn't it, where you might never see the person that's subletting on your land because they're living in a completely different dwelling.
Yeah, that's a very valid point and quite a common one for, you know, obviously week-to-week, maybe longer-term rentals, but also for the purposes of Airbnb, a lot of those granny flats can be used for some extra income. Now, we did do an episode, we'll put it in the show notes, we actually did an episode specific to Airbnbs and also to the rule changes that happened or are coming in New South Wales that you might want to be across if you're a resident of New South Wales. But certainly, it seems to be quite popular. People are looking for extra ways to bring in some money to help pay that mortgage faster and generate an income from something they're also investing in per se. So interesting topic, I think. In terms of pros and cons more generally, I think it's sort of, to me personally, I feel like it balances out. Like, I don't think there's more pros than cons necessarily. I think you need to be aware of what you're getting yourself into, as you suggested, to have a property manager involved so there is a middleman, reduces a lot of risk. I think there would be more cons if you were to do it privately, because your ability to manage your tenant without having someone in the middle could be a bit challenging.
Yeah, totally. And it is very common for first home buyers because they want to take on a mortgage for the first time and they want to minimise the costs in their life. Let's let out the other two rooms, whether that be to people they know or people they don't know. And one thing that really comes into play with this is, like, I went to university for 4 years and lived with probably over the duration of the 4 years, maybe 7 or 8 different people from time to time. And there was, at one stage, 5 of us in the one house. So that was a bit hairy.
Oh, gosh.
But understanding what type of personality you are, like, if you're an introvert, and you're just doing this for the cash, that could also blow up on you because you don't really want to be around people or have to talk to people too much, and that could impact the way you run your life.
I feel like we should start a thread on the Facebook group, like horror housemate stories, not because like we want to scare anybody off, but just because I find them so entertaining and funny. And I'm sure there's people who are, you know, that sort of introverted personality and maybe being paired with someone who's super extrovert as a housemate, or just people who don't know how to live with other people. That's a very common one. I feel like that should be a thread that we could maybe read out some of those comments in a future episode, because I'm sure it would get a bit of a laugh.
Oh, totally. Yeah, and my nephew will hate me for saying this. If he's taking a listen, hello, Jack. he was asking me the other day about going off to uni and living with his girlfriend. And I'm like, mate, that's got disaster written all over it, especially when you've got a couple of your mates living there as well. Like, just go and live your life separately. But it's understanding your personality and everyone else who's in the house with you to ensure that you're living your best version of your life.
A harmonious house is what you want, particularly when you're sharing, that's for sure.
So, yeah, that's a really good question.
Definitely. And I think a lot of people will find value in that and of what to consider. But I think bottom line is, before you do anything, speak to your accountant to understand the tax implications long term of what that decision means for subletting your home. Now, John, we've spoken about rent vesting a lot across our episodes to date. And one thing I think we've really focused on has been about the investor. What we haven't really focused on is the renter, the tenant. So Chelsea Eve posted in the Facebook group not too long ago, and her post reads, "Hello, I am in the process of moving out into a rental for the first time. What should I keep in mind? Any tips you have for first-time renters?" Now, our amazing community jumped on. There's like in excess of 30 comments on this post. and there's some interesting comments on there as to what to do and what not to do. So maybe we can start with them and then we can chime in with what we think. Someone said, "Do not get a cat. I'm a landlord and my carpet and curtains are ruined. Please, for the sake of your landlord, do not get a cat." Do we deem that as good advice?
Well, yeah, and that reminds me of definite laws that are continuing to change in each of the states, and a lot of them are now are more in favour of the tenant, I would say. So, and you and Vic, Emily, know that your standards have changed in the last, I think it was March this year, they brought out some new standards that will take place over the next few years. But, that would be my first tip, is check your entitlements as a tenant, and see what you can and can't do, because the cat might be one example, and there's probably a huge amount of pet lovers out there that just think, it's a game changer if I can't have my pet in with me.
Yeah, definitely check the rules specific to each of your states. In Victoria, that, you know, recently changed basically means that you can have a pet regardless, like you can't unreasonably refuse a pet. Check that out. Now, another one of our loyal community members, Scott Field, said, "Make sure you do a walkthrough, bring an OCD friend of the place before you move in, take photos, note down every little thing wrong so the owner doesn't try and charge you to fix it when you move out." Now, that comment alone had 18 likes on it, so a lot of people agreed with that.
Yeah.
Now, for people who are first-time renting, really important to note that when you move into the rental, you will be given a condition report. This report is photographic evidence taken by the property manager. Now, keep in mind, the property manager is the middle ground between the tenant and the landlord. So sometimes, you know, you've got to work out which side they are going for. But they go in there and they do the report and they leave commentary around things that are pre-existing issues. The best thing you can do, it's usually you've got to return it back around within 3 days in most states. The best thing you can do is be super thorough and cross-check that report and provide any additional photographic evidence or commentary that gets added into it, because that's kind of like, that's the gospel there. It's sitting there. That is the photographic evidence from the get-go. that will help you when you go to move out to ensure you get your bond returned.
That's right. Yeah. And even going back a step, and again, I had this conversation with my nephew as a first time potential renter or a tenant. It's putting your best case forward to actually get approved in a market or markets around the country right now that vacancy rates are so tight, you're competing with maybe 20, 25 others wanting that same property, aren't you? So they're going to be checking out your socials. They're going to see what you do on the weekend. So just make sure you're squeaky clean before you go and apply for the properties that you're after, and you've got good references and they'll check your bank statements in some cases. So they'll do an overhaul of your life. And if you don't read well, then you might be put to the bottom of the pile.
It's a really good point, particularly for first-time renters when you don't have a rental history, you know, on record as such, apart from maybe paying some board to mum and dad or something along those lines. It's really important to present as best as you can. Now, Nicole also commented on this post and said, make sure you get everything in writing on email between you and the agent, especially if something has been agreed or approved verbally. This is great advice. And so, for example, if you've had the phone call, following that phone call, you know, thank you for your chat earlier about the leaky tap we have reported in our property, just confirming this has been approved to be fixed, so on and so forth. So the lesson out of that is, it's not deemed approved unless it is in writing.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, as you said before, at the end of the day, the outcome is to live happily in the place that you're living in and get your bond back when you leave, right? If you've achieved that, then that's your sole purpose, I think, right? So everything leads towards that time when you're leaving, and just make sure that correspondence is clear with the property manager. And I don't know about you, Emily, but when I was rent vesting, I had some really good property managers and I had some awful ones, right? Some were batting for us, some were batting against us. So just really understand who you're dealing with and make note of everything that you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, it is hard to know because they're the middleman. It's sometimes hard to know what side of the fence they're actually on when things pop up. So yeah, definitely go into bat for yourself. Now, just to round this feed out of all these comments, one to close out with is from Abby Matisse. And Abby says, remember to be proud of yourself. Sometimes when we're renting, it can feel like a chore and you might cry at the checkout when you go and get your groceries. I promise you will look back at every new challenge fondly. Go you for renting. I think that's so important because it is a massive milestone to be a first-time renter. And it's, for a lot of people, a step into real adulthood, you know, paying rent, paying bills, and having a level of independence. So if you're listening and this is you, you're about to be a first-time renter, good on you. A good step in the right direction.
Absolutely it is. And just on those bills and the rent cost per week, just, I'm sure everyone's doing this that's listening, but just really understand your costs, because if you're coming out of the house of mum and dad, the life changes from a financial perspective, doesn't it? So really, don't underestimate those costs. Just talk to as many people as you can about what you would expect those costs to be on a monthly basis.
Most definitely. Now, we're going to take a quick break and we'll come back with some more commentary from the Facebook group. We are sort of diving into our Facebook group to look at some of the conversation that's been going on and share it with you. I know not everybody has time to endlessly scroll through Facebook, so this will fast track it for you. We'll be back in just a second with some more.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click Get Help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
John, Courtney France has asked a great question, and she's actually been very vulnerable in sharing this with us. So she says, I'm having a bit of a moment of a meltdown. I've been planning to buy my own one-bedder apartment in Melbourne's inner east or inner southeast, and I have pre-approval organised to do this, so I'm seriously looking. But now I'm thinking maybe I should be rent-vesting instead and get a good-size single-family home out in regional Vic on a decent lot of land. The loan size would actually be significantly less and I could pay it off reasonably quickly without any stress, and it would mean not having to pay things like LMI and no owner's court fees. And it would mean paying stamp duty because I'm not living them on my own. I don't get the exemption for the first home buyer's stamp duty concession. What are your thoughts or opinion? I've heard that a three-bedroom house is always better option than a one-bedroom apartment. Is that still true when you're talking metro versus regional? Well, what a dilemma.
What a dilemma. Yeah. So first of all, well done on putting your hand up and saying, I need some help. Regional versus city. So we've covered this topic before, haven't we? Don't know the episode number, but we've spoken about it. And we've spoken about apartment or unit versus house. So I think we need to understand what our long-term outcome is. And what I mean by that is if we're living in the city and we enjoy the city and we're going to live there for the next 20, 30, 40 years and we want to live in our own home soon, financially that may not be the best decision, but it may be the best lifestyle decision for the individual.
Yes, correct. And this word lifestyle does get thrown around a lot when it comes to this decision between rent versing versus owning at that point in time, doesn't it?
Yeah. Because, look, I would definitely agree that three-bedroom house on 500, 600, 700 square metres of land, you've got ability to change, add value, improve, more so than you have a one-bedroom apartment that sits five storeys up in a complex of 100 properties. But it, really comes down to your personal situation. And I actually had a clarity call this morning before we recorded about this exact thing where this person bought a property the first time 3 years ago and took advantage of the stamp duty concessions, and that was all they were looking at. They just looked at the pure savings of, I can save 25, 30 grand if I buy this property to live in for the next 12 months. But now 3 years later, they've realised, hang on a minute, that wasn't the best decision, and I wish I had have looked at other options. So it's a really common one for first home buyers. So look that long term. Don't just keep an eye on the short term.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think there can be a lot of tunnel vision around the stamp duty exemptions and concessions when it comes to first home buyers. And also a lot of people limiting themselves. It's not uncommon for people to be pre-approved for a higher amount than the concession threshold, for example, 600,000. They might actually be approved for 750,000, but their mental barrier between not wanting to pay stamp duty could actually result in a property purchase that A, might not suit them, and B, might not have been the best option for long-term growth in their plans. So, I think if you are debating this rent vesting versus buying your own home first, as John mentioned, he was on a clarity call with a client earlier this morning. So a clarity call with John is exactly that, a call to get some clarity across what you should do based on your personal circumstances. Because as much as there is value in this podcast, this is also very generic and general advice. It's not individual specific. There are links in the show notes to book a clarity call with John, and I've recommended quite a few people across to John to do that because he is a man who can help and can certainly give you the clarity that you need. So go and check that out. Now, one last thing for the episode today, John, is I'm not going to be a dibber-dobber or name names or anything. Let's just take the post for what it is. And
Were you one of those people at school?
Depends if it morally conflicted with myself as to if I would dibber-dob. You know, things like if I knew someone was stealing money, Yes.
Yes. That's not on.
If somebody was, you know, sneakily getting away with something that wasn't too impactful, no. But, you know, you take it as it comes. Anyway, so the general topic is around seeking out investment or groups or property groups to help you buy an investment property. Now, you and I being in the industry, we know when we can sense something is genuine and people are doing the right thing and it's a solid operation. On the flip side, we also know when things are a little bit dodgy and we know the warning signs to look out for. But unfortunately, advertisements that have some really good marketing behind them, some really compelling figures behind them, can see buyers in a bit of a trap. And so I'm referring to these sort of, we call them property spruikers. Don't we? I mean, what does it actually mean? I say that, but I don't really...
I don't know. No, okay. Essentially, I suppose what we're saying is you've got to have your eyes wide open, don't you? You've got to be able to look at your situation and say, well, does that suit my financial position? Is that the strategy I'm after? Or am I simply seeing the glossy brochures and because that price point fits my capacity? And understanding how they do get remunerated. So if they're not charging anything up front, that's cool. If they are getting paid, who are they getting paid from, right? So and that's needs to be transparent through the process. So that's all we're saying is just ask the questions. Everyone needs to get paid in life for the work they do, but just ask the questions before you enter into something like that and just see, well, okay, if it's brand new, two-bedroom apartment that you're after, is that really your strategy and what else is out there? Like when we go to ANZ, they're not going to tell you that Westpac's a better lending institution than them or have a better offer. So that's why you and I do what we do, Emily, is we can look across all options to be able to buy something that's going to suit the client the best, not just the one that you get paid the most by.
Yeah, most definitely. And another thing, a little tip in there as well is don't be afraid to ask whoever you're, you know, consulting with if you can speak to one of their previous clients, particularly if they don't have too many reviews online, or maybe there's just one video of someone from a few years ago that they've got on there. Just don't be afraid to say, you know, do you mind if I speak to someone who recently purchased through you and you know, what their experience was like? And, you know, 90% of the time people are more than happy to do so, particularly if they're a very reputable firm. But yeah, don't be afraid to do your due diligence. At the end of the day, buying a property in whatever capacity is a very large investment. It's probably the biggest, unless you've got a mad car obsession that warrants a big price tag. It's probably the most amount of money you will put into something. So doing your due diligence around having your A team involved in that is really crucial to make sure A, they're good at what they do, and B, that you like them. I think it's so important to like the people that you're working with, right? If you're going to be speaking to them a lot.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah, really important, yeah, to be on the same page.
Mm. Yeah, 100%.
Well, I think that rounds out today's episode. I'm always, you know, keeping my eye on that Facebook group, seeing what's in there. If you're sort of like, what's this Facebook group we keep talking about? So, it's the My Millennial Money Facebook group, which I guess My Millennial Money is the umbrella for all the other podcasts that are under the brand. So we've got obviously the property podcast, we've got health, we've got careers, we've got Gen Z money. There's all sorts of podcasts that are under the one roof, but the My Millennial Money Facebook group is where everybody posts for questions to be answered and get some advice.
Yeah, and as you said before at the start, Emily, a lot of people do post in with questions and comments, which is awesome. But a lot of people don't actually have a Facebook account or don't log on that regularly, including myself. So it's great for those who aren't in it to be able to have get a feel for what people are asking out there. And generally, with most questions, if we're not asking them, we're thinking them.
That's very true. And it's just a matter of someone putting their hand up and asking for help, and it helps the majority. So if you've ever contributed to a question, thank you so much. We love hearing from you. And just in closing, if you have gotten value out of today's episode or any other episode you've listened to on the podcast, please do leave us a little review. It makes our day, and we do a little happy dance in the background when we see a review come through. We'd love to hear what you enjoy in the podcast and any feedback of what you'd like to hear more of as well. So thank you so much for tuning in and partaking. Any closing words, John?
No, just live the best version of your day.
Love that. Love that. Well, we will be back here next week. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll speak with you soon.
Okay, bye.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
Taking your property journey to the next level starts with education.
That's why we make this podcast, but we've also created online courses to equip you with the knowledge you need to take the next steps.
I've created the Solvair Online Academy, open to both first home buyers and seasoned investors, where I share my tips and experience from 20 years in the property space.
And I've created the Buying Coach, built from my experience as a buyer's advocate to demystify the confusion around purchasing property, particularly for first home buyers.
Follow the links in the show notes to sign up and get started today.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.